right, here we go. Welcome, everybody, to the Tom and Curly Show. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for being a big part of the show. How, you might ask? Well, you get a chance to write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well. Come on in through the State Roofing text line at 98973. Ready. Where have all the waiters gone? Long time of passing. That's right. On the cusp of the reopening, the labor shortage continues, threatening Washington restaurants and the recovery. Where are they? The Heather Bosch was reporting on where
by
they
May
might
of
be.
2020, more than a million Washington state residents had filed for unemployment benefits because of the pandemic. With the state poised to fully reopen June 30th, many employers say they can't find enough workers. The head of the Washington Retail Association, Renee Sundy, with one example.
One of our malls had a hiring event, and they had 112 potential applicants, and only four of them were willing to take an interview.
The restaurant industry reports a similar struggle. Puget Sound-based business giants Amazon, Costco, and Starbucks have all raised their minimum wages to at least $15 an hour to lure and keep employees.
Yeah, you know, this is quite the conundrum, right?
Jeff Schulman is a business professor at the University of Washington.
All of a sudden, companies can't find enough people to work reliable hours.
Seattle University professor Vladimir Dashkiev attributes at least some of this to unemployment benefits.
Stimulus payments are quite substantial.
$300 in weekly checks from the federal government are set to continue until September 4th. Low-wage jobs may not be as attractive. Schulman says other factors include lingering pandemic fears, the availability of childcare or lack of it, and businesses all eyeing that same June 30th reopening date.
Businesses ramping up, and they need people, and they need them fast.
It's unclear just how long this will last, but for now, workers appear to have more influence over what types of jobs, pay, and hours they're willing to work.
Mm-hmm. Lindsey Graham was talking to the Office of Management and Budget, was asking her about unemployment benefits.
Their belief is that the enhanced unemployment benefit is deterring people from re-entering into the workforce. There's a lot of jobs out there that are unfilled and will never be filled until you change the benefit structure. Does that logic make sense to you, given where we're at in our economy?
She sounds like you on this answer, Tom.
I understand the logic, but I've also not met Americans who would prefer not to work. There's a dignity to work in this country that most Americans
have. Well, I got a lot of people in my family that ain't working because they're getting... I'll show you some in my family.
Ouch! Senator Lindsey Graham calling out people in his family.
Bottom line is, I think there are people out there that are not bad people, but they're not going to work for $15 an hour if they make 23 unemployed. That doesn't make you a bad person. If you're working for $15 an hour, that makes you almost a chump. And I'm not blaming them. I'm blaming us.
It is so crazy that they will actually, some employers will pay you just to come to the job interview. And the teenager employment rate is the highest it's been since 1958, since they started mucking around with the minimum wage. I believe that this is a great way to get employers to raise wages without having to try to pass the $15 minimum wage across the country. What you do is you have the employer now compete against the government. And so then the person sitting at home getting paid $22 or $23 an hour, if that employer wants them, they now compete against the federal government's gift of $23. So in effect, you have now forced them, you've seen everybody start to raise up the wages in order to compete against the other great employer known as Uncle Sam. So look at this. You actually have passed minimum wage without having to pass minimum wage.
Well, but maybe you can still pass minimum wage. A lot of minimum wage in individual states has gone up. But yeah, the thing is,
not
is that
$15,
those unemployment...
Joe Biden talked about $15 an hour. Warren talked $15. Bernie Sanders, $15 an hour, that this was going to be universal. Well, you had southeastern states going, well, hold on a second, in Alabama, $15 an hour, right? This is now you have passed it de facto by injecting $23 an hour into the person sitting on the couch, and now the employer can't get them off the couch.
Yes, but that, as this the long Seattle Times article and Heather's report indicates, that's one of the factors, but it's only one of many. We've done this story a number of times, and one of the interesting things they talk about, the restaurants, where the restaurant industry was hit harder than any other industry, the hospitality industry, mm-hmm. and they lost, you know, huge chunks. I don't know if it's 40% of their business or something, yeah. In restaurants, bigger than any other arena. And what they say now is they can't get them back because the people that were working there are now working in other places, like Amazon fulfillment centers or grocery stores and the like, mm-hmm. because yeah. those were the ones that were booming. And then the question is how convenient or how, then working conditions at a restaurant are not as ideal as the stability of some of these other jobs is being suggested. And so the restaurant industry is really taking it hard.
Well, here's somebody talking about that, Tom, okay. Washington Hospitality Association. Here is Anthony Anton.
But in the hospitality alone, we're short about 90,000 workers.
90,000?
And that is...
That's Ursula from the Gene Ursula Show.
Causing a lot of people just... Can I reopen? How am I going to recover? How am I going to start digging out of debt if I can't really get my business restarted? 11 of the Employment Security Department's 14 categories are short workers right now. And that's across wage spectrums. That's across benefit packages. It's all across the spectrum. This is a shortage of workers for a variety of reasons. But I think this is a workers' market. And I think there will be people who recognize that and will want to compete in that market.
Yeah, and so there are other factors, and one of them may be that they're moving into different arenas. So waiters and waitresses may not be making what they've used to be able to make, and they see it as a much less stable industry than they might have beforehand. Here's one good sign, though, if you're concerned for restaurant workers. One good sign. Now, it is true, there'll be a certain percentage of people that are using their employment benefits. They say it's under 40%, but even so, they are going to run out at the end of the summer.
Are they?
The other thing is,
Yes. Are you sure?
Well, I mean, unless they'd have to vote more. I mean, are you suggesting that they'll vote more?
Continue it.
Okay, so that...
Why not? Continue it? This is the guaranteed income. Well, this becomes part of guaranteed income or continues to force employers to raise prices.
I thought I heard it on our news. I was walking by the radio at the time that they're now you're going to have to start, looking for a job. You have to claim their three, jobs or something that you've contacted or something, that they are going to put some of those things in play. I think the pandemic concern is going to be waning by the fall. That probably won't happen. But either way, remember, they say, who benefited? So you've got warehouses, you've got Amazon, they all benefited. Who else benefited? Grocery stores. Well, the one thing they said is grocery stores, which have benefited tremendously over the last pandemic year, are going to eventually fall back down to earth. Mm-hmm. And so there won't be such demand for workers at grocery stores. And then those people may filter back into restaurants. So there may be hope on the horizon in terms of when we're opening up, if we really open up in this state at the end of this month, that the restaurant won't be as short a staff coming down the pike, because grocery stores are not going to be. We all lived in grocery stores and ate out of purchases at grocery stores because restaurants weren't open. So that's another positive factor.
That Anthony Anton had said that it's a workers' market.
Yeah. For right now.
Right. It was also a workers' market in 2019, but you had two factors in play. You had the economy was ripping, absolutely ripping, red hot, and you needed workers because you were growing in productivity and businesses were growing. There was not the third factor where the government was paying you to sit at home. As Lindsey Graham points out, if you can sit at home and make $22 or $23 an hour, you'll sit at home. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just a smart move. Ursula asks about why these numbers are still the same. By the way, let's remember that schools reopened in April and the numbers are lower now than they were in December. So you can take that off because the Biden administration said there's three factors. one, parents can't go back to work because kids are in, not in school. That's not
true
anymore. Two, the other one was they're concerned about getting COVID, and that's no longer the case. It is the fact that you're paying to sit at home.
Okay, wait. Before you play that clip, though, John.
Well, why would I?
The education. Before you play that clip, the educational business doesn't work. I've heard from parents. They say, listen, it doesn't help if Johnny's going to school on Tuesdays and Thursdays. That doesn't help. You still need to be home for those other days that you cannot, you know, go back to work on like a 2 or 3 day basis with these kids. So even though some schools opened up, they're not full time yet. And that won't happen until the fall. Anyway, that's just a little context. Okay, now play the clip.
Go back into the workplace when I cannot guarantee that I'm going to have full time hours or that this isn't going to happen again, and then I'll lose my shorts again when, in fact, I'm making more right now staying on unemployment.
This is one of the things we talked about earlier when we were trying to push the governor to establish a plan to get reopened. And the good news is now he has. If we offer you work right now, it's for June 30th, and we know that we're going to stay open. And so that instability that was a struggle about a month ago when the governor did announce a plan has given us stability. So I think that was a reason, but I think that reason is now is now removed. There are other concerns, but I think right now for the 30,000 of our workers that are still on unemployment, there are 90,000 jobs available today.
90,000. There are 375,000 food and entertainment workers that lost their jobs, the bartenders, waiters, waitresses, and those that were in the hospitality business. About 375,000 in the state of Washington's businesses were destroyed with the governor closing down businesses. So, this is in effect, it has caused the cost of hiring people because a wage is a price and a price is a wage. You buy labor the same way you buy hamburger. You're going to buy the person to come to work. It was Qdoba, or it was the one that normally has a problem with the
Chipotle.
Chipotle just announced today that they will be adding additional cost to all of their burritos. Now a burrito is up to $8 in order to offset the additional cost of having to pay for more people. So you have in effect done it. You've raised the minimum wage. Thank you very much, Joe Biden. Good news.
Well, I mean, it's you make it sound like the pandemic didn't happen.
Tom, there's 23 states in the United States.
First off, what do you mean by this response?
The response of closing things down and then the response of sending $2 trillion into the economy and paying people.
Which was supported by Republicans.
But extended, Tom, to extend it over and over again in order to be able to solicit votes, to buy votes and to buy power. And ultimately what this turns into is, vote for me, here's what I'll give you. I'll give you $300 a week. And they have been talking about guaranteed income, that they might want to continue this past September. Two, we're also going to give you free childcare. Plus, if you have a kid, we're going to pay you $3,000 a month for your kids. Plus, we'll also give you community college. Now, with all of those goodies, why would you want to vote me out of office?
Well, John, that's how democracy works. You have people
that's
do what you want them
Tom.
to do.
No, that's not democracy. That's where
what
you're
do you
taking
mean that
money. No. That's not democracy. That is where you're paying. You're taking money, and then you are redistributing it, or you're writing blank checks to the voter, so the voter will vote for you because you're giving them lots of free stuff.
I know, but there are a lot of voters that won't do that because they realize it raises taxes. So it's always a balance.
Who? 50%, Tom, of taxpayers. 50% of the population in the United States pays 4% of collected federal taxes. Half of all taxpayers pay nothing. What do they care if taxes go up?
Are you okay? Well, then that's fine. If that's the case, then I don't understand why the Democrats don't win every single election.
Because they've got other crazy stuff that they would also like to be able to do, which is get rid of people's Second Amendment rights. Tom, you don't think that's part of it? Plus, they also push for extreme abortion stuff. There are things that people do vote on, but overall, if you rob Peter to pay Paul, you will never hear any complaints coming from Paul.
Okay, but the problem is that you are suggesting that anything that the voters vote for, they're doing it only for selfish reasons.
Absolutely.
And those selfish reasons are invalid. I know, but then that is what, not, I'm not trying to make this kind of philosophical claim about democracy, but I mean, that's why we have elections. You vote for what you want to see done. And if more people want to have more poor people helped out than the rich, that's the majority. Now, the counter is, when you're the rich, you have all the money to campaign and manipulate and whatever else you want to do to get people on your side. But that's the constant battle.
No, to believe that the government helps poor people out.
The government's involvement helps
poor people out.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that's what we want to do. When you mention things like childcare, we want to support low-income families. We want to support middle-income families. That's the argument that Joe Biden's tax plans are in response to the tax cuts for the wealthier under Trump. That's what the balance is.
We've
been in this
Bismarck.
Kind of yin and yang economy for a long time between Democrats
Otto von
and Republicans.
Bismarck. Otto von Bismarck. If I can make them dependent, I can count on their vote.
Okay, and are we dependent or not?
We're going to give you community college for free. We're going to give you $3,000 a month for your kids, and you make $200,000 a year. Plus, we're also going to be able to help you with food. Tom, if you make the person dependent, as you become dependent, then you can count on that person continuing to vote for you, right?
Social Security making us dependent in our old age? And is that a good or bad thing?
Social Security has destroyed the ability for the individual to be able to save for themselves because they're under the illusion that the money will be there for them. It's a patsy scheme.
Most people would disagree with you and like the Social Security system, and they wish they could figure out a way to have it go on longer than maybe it's it can at this point. You're going to have to devise it. But that's what the legislature, that's what you got Congress doing. They'll try to come up a way to prop that up because a lot of people like that social safety net. Sounds like you don't want to have any social safety net. If that's the case, then you're in a minority. Doesn't mean you're wrong. It just means that you're in the minority.
I love free stuff, Tom. Who do I have to vote for to get more free stuff?
Well, it depends on what you consider free.
It's where I don't have to pay for it.
Well, okay. I mean, are you serious? I don't know what you would like, John. I imagine maybe a more money for the military. Is that for free? Yes.
That's
for our protection. Okay.
Right. By the way, we're paying less than 1%.
What we're disagreeing with is what you want the money to come from.
Yeah. All right. Well, that federal government is unconstitutionally to defend our shores. I'm fine with that. All right. Here's Tracy Taylor defending our roadway.
And that's free.
Hey, free college. Free college. Okay. Interesting sort of thought piece that Jacob sends out to us regarding people doing good things for others. And it's the idea of if somebody does something publicly, they make a generous act publicly, when the act is known, people don't ever just simply look at it as a generous act. The article said people look under the bonnet, Tom, or they look under it, like they try to figure out why did the person do that? Why were they so generous?
The and motivations.
There's always a motivation.
Naturally skeptical, you know, like the humble brag kind of stuff. Yeah. Oh, come on.
So then all acts of generosity should be completely the person should remain anonymous because then no one looks around it and no one gets any credit for it. Reminded me of this scene from Curb Your Enthusiasm.
What is that? Being donated by anonymous.
Yeah.
Anonymous?
Yeah.
I'm not crazy about that. Now it looks like, I did mine for the credit as opposed to, you know, Mr. Wonderful Anonymous.
I know who it is.
They're at an art museum, by the way, and an entire wing is being paid for.
It's Ted. Ted is anonymous.
Ted Danza.
What are you, kidding?
No. Isn't that great? He donated the whole wing. Didn't want anybody to know.
Well, he told you. So apparently he wanted somebody to know.
He told me, okay?
Who else did he tell? How do you know he just told you?
No. The point is that he didn't need all the fanfare and didn't need a...
Fanfare? What fanfare? I don't like the fanfare. Are you saying I like fanfare?
You can tell a few people. He just doesn't need the whole world to know that he donated all this money.
You know what? I didn't need the world to know either. Nobody told me that I could be anonymous and tell people. I would have taken that option, okay? You can't have it halfway. You're either anonymous or you're not. What is it?
Look, people are pointing out and go, there's Larry David.
Oh, yeah, there's Larry David, the guy who has to have his name up on the wall, as opposed to Mr. Anonymous. Buck was really tanned.
Yeah, it is a great scene because then he calls him out on it later. Yeah, a few people know. No, you can't have it both ways. When you have it the public way, what happens, Tom, according to this study?
Well, in fact, it's told in the headline of the story, why are we so uncharitable to those doing good deeds? And you heard it exactly right there. So Ted Danson supposedly did a good deed and Larry David, you know, thinks he's a horrible person for doing it. And so the question is, why are we so harsh? After all, the Ted Danson character did indeed donate all that money. So why do we find that so contemptuous to think that somebody did something and then ended up leaking it? And it's a fascinating analysis to me about human psychology and what we value apparently more than goodness or charity is authenticity. And that if you are doing something, so let's say you're the Ted Danson character and you're doing it anonymously to garner more appreciation from the few people that you tell, that really is seen as not authentic, but hypocritical. So Larry David does have a point, which is if you were really anonymous, you wouldn't tell anybody and still you're getting all the benefit out of it. And so it's an examination. It's really a long and intense article about why we feel so mad about people when they act as if they preach one thing and then they're caught the other. I mean, it's the typical story of often the Southern preacher, you know, who preaches, you know, all the goodness in the world, and you find out that he's cheating on his wife or something like that, that people really hold that against him. Where this article seems to, you know, kind of make a real bite and makes a counter argument to why we shouldn't feel this way is they take a couple of fundraising companies they want to examine. They talk about something called Pilata Teamworks. And what they do is they raised a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But they raised a lot of money, but they took a good cut of it so that when the word leaked out that this Pilata Teamworks, that the CEO was making millions of dollars and all these people, you know, the board and all that were profiting from it. There was such outrage that they ended up having to collapse. They ended up going, you know, belly up. They just run out of business because the reputation was so bad. Because when you're in the field of doing charitable works, you can't be seen as somehow profiting much from it. And this article says, okay, you know who else suffered? All those charities. They raised millions and millions and millions of dollars for all those charities. And yeah, they took a cut of it. Still, the ones that were hurt the most were all those the charities that were getting all those millions of dollars from this other, you know, from this fundraising company. And they just said, yeah, we have to examine ourselves and ask ourselves, why are we so hard on people like that?
I don't, you know, I'm in the business of watching people give huge amounts of money.
Yes.
And every once in a while, truly anonymous gift of $500,000 or $250,000. Mm-hmm. There's a guy, I still don't know who it is, that gives $500,000 every year at Union Gospel Mission. And I don't know who it is. But there's other people when you say, does anybody here care to give? And you start the levels at $500 or $1 million. Mm-hmm. The person raises the card. People cheer. They don't look over and go, it's judgy. I guess it's while it's happening in that room. But when I remember reading, I think it was Ayn Rand wrote an article called There Is No Such Thing as Altruism, that everybody, even Mother Teresa, receives something. The reason I'm stopping and helping the person on the side of the road with the flat tire is not for the sake of the guy with the flat tire. It's because it makes me feel good. So that all gifts given to someone else in sort of the guise or at least the wrapping of charity really isn't charity at all. It comes back to benefit you because if it didn't, you wouldn't do it in the first place.
That's been your argument since we've started this show, is that you don't believe there's anything altruistic.
No,
this guy, I think
chemically, you can prove it. Yes. You could prove it. You could prove the part of the brain.
Okay.
When you're doing a good act for somebody, it is the exact same part of the brain that lights up when it comes to pleasure.
Yes, but, John, but the thing is, I think the counter to that is that it can be more or less altruistic. In other words, if I just give $100 to somebody and he's giving me something in return, that's more of a transaction. I bet I don't get that little dopamine hit that you're talking about, but that's a pure transaction. But I bet I get the same dopamine hit if I give him $100,000 or $500,000 or $1 million, depending on how much money I have or don't have. That there's, as this article points out, why can't we accept the fact that by doing something good, you also get a little benefit from it? In other words, we shouldn't be so black and white. You shouldn't be, no, there's no altruism. There's only selfishness. We should appreciate the fact that, so there's a little, you feel good when you do something, good for somebody, and it's a mental health kick. But still, it's an act of generosity. He says we should be able to accept, reconcile the fact that something can be both for profit and for good, which is what I think you do as an auctioneer. I mean, that is your job, but you are also raising money for the good, and no one should hold that against you. That's your job that you have.
Well, people say to me, but you're charging nonprofits? It's like, but if I didn't charge them, what, I'm going to do this thing for free?
Yes. Yeah. And seeing that, and then so basically, we should be more charitable to the people that are taking a cut of the fundraising effort, because without them, the charities wouldn't be making any of the money that they are.
Yeah.
But it goes against the purest grain, the black and white grain I think we all have. That's
I'm doing an auction for free on Sunday here in the Clum. Corey, who was a bartender, lives down the street from me. He had heart condition, and he died of COVID within 3 days. He was 36 years old, 35 years old, and everybody's coming together. We're going to have this. Who knows what this thing's going to be like, but we're all going to be at the Mule and Elk on Sunday at 5 o'clock, and I'm doing that one for free because, the guy lived down the street. He's a neighbor of mine, and again, it makes me feel like I'm part of this community, so I'm not judging it. I'm getting something for it. Again, Mother Teresa, any act of kindness also benefits the person that is performing the act.
But not equally.
No,
like John.
No,
you could be.
No.
What?
No. You're right. Not equally. You can't judge it on the value because everybody's going to have their own standard by which the gift is equivalent to. Yes.
Yes. Fair enough.
Yeah. Like the person giving a kidney.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's more of a risk involved than not. But anyway, now
they've studied people in the size of the brain. People that are more giving of others or more altruistic have a larger brain. You know how they did that? They went ahead and got a list of everybody that had ever donated a kidney to a total stranger. They brought them in, did an MRI, and they found out one part of their brain is larger than most people's brains. Tracy Taylor looking at traffic, people signaling and letting other people cut in front of them because it's an altruistic act. You, Tom, that I was pushing back on the idea that there's altruism.
Well, I mean, we've had this ongoing debate since we've known each other.
Yeah.
I think that if, and again, this is a crude approximation, but if you tend to see people as worse than they are, and I tend to see people as better than they are, the kind of the skeptic in you always sees altruistic people as really being selfish. And maybe your source is Ayn Rand. I think that the book or the essay was called The Virtue of Selfishness, actually.
Yes.
But that's the kind of dispute. I think people can do things out of the goodness of their heart and not expect anything in return. The fact that there may be physiological responses to that shouldn't mitigate the fact that that person is a better person than somebody else who doesn't do that.
Right. No.
That's all.
The value of good and bad, the virtue of good and bad, not judging anything on that metric, but just simply on, we are a series of chemical reactions, right? The great scene from Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, humbug, you're nothing more than a bit of undigested beef, right? Referring to Marley. That we are a series of a chemical and electrical reactions in our body that are more than 50 million years old, we would have ceased to exist as a species if we had not developed altruism or not developed some type of release of dopamine that we did something good for someone else. The people that were doing good for someone else, that part of the brain grew bigger. So that 50, 60, 70 million years ago, that tribe that was looking out for one another continued to do better and were able to procreate and grow because they were looking out to help each other, right? And that what they were getting in return was a sense of pleasure because they were doing something for someone else. Again, I'm not on the thing of good or bad, no moral thing, just we are a series of chemical reactions.
But how do you explain then the prominence of, and again, not passing judgment, but you know, somebody who does something that society thinks is bad or evil to gain power and succeeds at that. There must be a dopamine rush when if you're a Genghis Khan or something and conquered the world and killed and slew all your enemies, that must be another kind of dopamine kick. How do you gauge?
Well, because what happens is for that individual, they themselves have personally benefited. It's the same sort of thing, a personal benefit. So probably through the brain, either one of them is something that the person's receiving. But it's an act of aggression or an act of quote-unquote love. But either way, it still boils down to that person's continuing to either exist and then procreate. It's all about living and getting laid, Tom. Here's Tracy Taylor.
There's a drop.